This is Liz Chappell talking to Will Todd at Bonavista Vista in Armidale on the 11th of March 2020. Thank you very much for agreeing to this interview, Will. It's part of an ongoing project we have with Australian Garden History, and we've always been fascinated by Bonavista because the garden is so intact. Could you tell me what you know about its very early days?
Well, Liz, that's my pleasure to talk about it because I was actually born in this house, so it's always been a very special part of my life. But the first owner was a man called Patrick Wade, and he took up the original title in 1880, and he was a mail contractor. And he built the original house, which was basically three rooms down, three rooms up, with a veranda and a balcony and different things. But I also suspect out in the backyard, there's quite an interesting stable building. And because he was a mail contractor and had to look after his horses, he had a very good accommodation for his horses, which is still there. Patrick Wade apparently was quite an interesting entrepreneurial type of person. And he also, at one stage, owned what was Tattersall's Hotel in Armidale, but I think it was called the Duke of Wellington, or a different name anyway. But sadly, Patrick Wade died early, before 1986, and the place was sold.
Do you know if Patrick Wade had any impact on the garden, or did that happen later?
I don't think he had any input in the garden, but the house was much smaller, and I think he was probably concentrating on his living more. He would have had some sort of a garden around the place, but not too much, I don't think. So that happened. Mm-hmm. The next owner was John D. Bradley, who was the district school inspector. So a lot has been written about him. He owned the property from 1886 to 1910. He was a keen gardener, and he also had a large family. I think he had six daughters, and some of the daughters married into the Malham family, which was a well-known local family. But I have photos taken in 1890 of the garden and the house when John Bradley owned it, and it shows what he'd done with the garden.
Would you like to describe this picture for the record, Will?
Right. Well, the first photograph is taken looking from the house to the north, and one can see a picket fence enclosing more formal gardens, which are bordered by terracotta tiles, which are still in place to this day, but the trees and things have taken over the area, which is in the photograph. But you can clearly see the layout of the garden looking from the house to what was the road at the front. And then there's another photo with two gentlemen standing at the front gate, picket sort of fence, and I imagine one of them's Mr. Bradley, don't know who the other is, and it looks to be taken a little bit after the first photograph I have because of the growth in there. I don't know whether they're roses or what they are, but it's looking back towards the house, which you can see how it was when the Bradleys lived here. So that's those two photos.
I think it's quite remarkable to see a Federation garden or a late Victorian garden in such an intact condition. Will, can you identify many of the trees from the early photos that are still here?
Yes, I can identify the Fittinias, and and I can't actually see. There was a radiata pine behind the house, which was there, but I can't identify any of the others. I don't think I can see the bunya pine tree either in those photos, but they would be the only ones I can identify.
So it was Mr. Bradley, though, that planted that magnificent bunya pine?
I suspect so.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think in the photograph they're standing near the bunya pine somewhere, but I can't see the pine in them.
And what about the cypress hedge?
Well,
did that come later?
Then we go forward to 1910, when the Tyndall family from Ramorney at Grafton bought the property, which was situated within a day's drive of Mr. Tyndall's property. So I think he had property at Grafton and also out around Gunnedah and those places, but Bonavista was his base. And he extended the house considerably. He put on a bedroom wing, on the eastern side of the house, and a formal drawing room at the front. They were the last two. They were the last rooms built, but it was Mr. Tyndall who laid out the hedges as they are now. So when he arrived here, all the bordered area that Mr. Wade had done stayed intact, and then Mr. Tyndall extended the garden and planted, had an extensive vegetable garden, and he planted the hedges before the First World War.
That is incredible. So they're the original plants in that hedge.
That's right.
Do you know what cypress they are?
I don't know. We've always just known it as the cypress pine hedge.
Mm. And can you describe that hedge? Because it's not just a formal straight back and sides, is it?
No. Well, when I was a child, I remember it being cut by hand, and the men had trestles and planks and hedge cutters and string. And it was basically square, as you'll see if in some of the photographs we have of taken around the early 1950s or late 1940s. So it was beautifully a square and so on. But you can only trim it back. You can't cut back into it. So you just trim it. And then over the years, it's grown into this unusual shape, which is, looking from the end, it's like a little child's drawing of a house with a simple house with a peaked roof.
Yes.
And it was my... I had the horrors through the drought that the hedge may have not survived the drought, but thankfully it looks as though it has. So I'm very delighted about that.
So what other contributions do you know that Tyndall's made to the layout of the garden?
Well, they then... the Tyndall family removed all the pickets that Mr. Bradley had put around the front mm-hmm. garden, which was edged. And as a child, I remember the picket fences are in sections, so that the pickets were actually reused. The panels, some of them went right along the front of the garden, and then somewhere around the cottages, so they were recycled. So that happened.
Yes.
Then the main thing that the Tyndalls did was add the drive.
Yes.
So there's a horseshoe-shaped drive coming in and out now. And Mr. Tyndall, after planting the hedge and separating it, making the sort of rooms with the hedges, then he had a driveway that came in from the eastern side, which is still there, and then up to the house. And it divided around a triangular bed, and one part of the drive went to the back of the house and one went to the front of the house, and that's all exactly as it was laid out by Mr. Tyndall.
Now, that would have been in the very early days of motor cars.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's it. And
which were no doubt still housed in the stables.
Yes, and actually I do have one of the photos of two of Mr. Tyndall's cars. Mr. Tyndall had a chauffeur, and he had a chauffeur's cottage, and that he lived, which is still here, so... That's Mr. Tyndall's.
That's wonderful. Now, your parents then came after the Tyndalls?
My parents came in 1946. Mr. C.F. Tyndall sadly passed away. The Tyndall family as a family lost a lot of their men in the First World War and even the Second World War, sadly. And my parents bought the property from Mr. Tyndall's daughter-in-law, whose husband had been killed in the bombing of Darwin in 42. Yeah. In February 42. Mm. And Tyndall Air Base is named after Wing Commander Tyndall.
Oh, right, yes.
So, and his widow had lived here for 7 years prior to moving away.
And then your parents came. You were one of the younger of your, or the youngest of your family, Will?
I'm the youngest of six, and I was born in 1949 here at Buena Vista.
So really, you've spent most of your life here?
Yes, except I did spend quite a few years out on the Western Plains. We had, still have it. My family have country up between Collarin and Bryan, Mungindi and Burren Junction areas. So I spent about 30 years out there. And then came back here after my mother died. My mother lived here until she was 97 years of age. And then I bought the place from the family in 1999.
That's wonderful. Can you recall back what it was like living here as a child? Was this a great garden for games?
Well, it was a magical place to grow up because we had, as well as the garden and so on, there's a small acreage, acres, so we had horses and sheep and cattle and all those sorts of things. But the garden was magical because of the hedges and things, so we'd have lots of fun, you know, running around and doing things we shouldn't have done, like walking on top of the hedge and things like that, which was not very much appreciated by the gardener.
Did you tell me a story once about putting tennis rackets on your feet so you could walk on the hedge?
Yes, and our legs would get very scratched. And the gardener, I could never understand why he didn't like small children, and I think that was the reason, because we were always sort of climbing trees and doing things and walking on the hedge and doing things we shouldn't have. But no, it was a lot of fun, and riding our bicycles around the paths and all that sort of thing. And, and it was basically... as I say, it was a small farm, but we were fairly self-sufficient because we had a wonderful, productive vegetable garden. And yes. I well remember things like asparagus beds, strawberries beds, gooseberry hedges, and all the things that you grow. And there were a lot of fruit trees here. So my mother did a lot of preserving and that sort of thing with fruit.
You mentioned a gardener. Did your parents have a full-time gardener?
Yes, yes. So it was all beautifully maintained when I was growing up, and then probably the full-time gardener came to an end probably about the late 60s, 1960s, and then we've just sort of made do with whatever since.
And was your mother an active gardener herself?
She wasn't what you would call a very active gardener. She loved flowers, and she would always find a flower in the garden because she'd have arrangements in the house. In the dead of winter, she'd find something somewhere, and she loved that. But I wouldn't... she loved the garden, but she didn't... she wasn't overly involved in the day-to-day work in it.
Now, you have a lovely collection of black and white photographs here, Will, that were taken when you were a very small child. Could we have a look through those and you can give us a verbal tour?
Right. Well, these photographs were taken, there was a nurse here who was stayed after I was born, and she stayed a friend of the family, and she took lots of photographs, fortunately. So one of the photos here to start with is looking from the house down towards the bunya pine tree at the front gate, which is usually closed. And you can see a small privet-type hedge, and you can see a lot of fruit trees between the hedge and what is a tennis court, looking down the front drive. That one. And then there is one looking down the drive that we use to drive in all the time now. They're just bordered by some borders. And as a child, they used to grow a lot of dahlias and things down that drive. Mm-hmm. They were staked.
And the large trees at the front on Bonavista Road, are they eucalypts?
They're eucalypts, and sadly they were magnificent eucalypts, and they were removed when they widened the road. And I was very sad that they couldn't have sort of kept them, but they would have been in the middle of the road and couldn't have been done, unfortunately, because I remember the road at the front just as a gravel road start with, and then over the years the road's become busier and busier, yes. And of course now it's a very busy road.
So do I just put them down, yes, here in order?
Yes. Then the next photo we're looking at is taken from one of the upstairs windows across the front drive where I had it's still there. It's a triangular garden bed, and on the point of each each point, there was a Japanese maple. There were two magnificent red-coloured ones on one side, and then there was a green one on the point as you're coming into the drive. Sadly, those trees were very badly damaged in the 1996 hailstorm and never survived. But they'd been there all my life up until 1996, so they were very much part of our memory. And that little garden bed is surrounded by tiles which had been glazed, they must have been sort of a slightly better quality tile than all the original tiles that Mr. Bradley had put down the front.
Which are, of course, still there, yes, which is remarkable.
Yes, so they're all there, and you can see them quite clearly now because we don't have the trees, and we just have flowers and things in that garden basically now. There is one rhododendron which amazes me because it's very old, and I think it was sheltered by the Japanese maple, but it has survived, and it has survived the drought. I did keep watering it, but I think the roots must be so far established that it's happy where it is. And in the summertime, it's really exposed to the heat, which is quite amazing.
That is indeed.
So that's that one. Then the next photograph is a photograph taken within what we call the enclosed lawn, and it shows the sundial, which was a little memorial that Mrs. Tyndall had made to her son, and who was killed in the war. So that's still there. One can see fruit trees. There were peach trees. My memory of the peach trees were they were never very good bearers, but they were there. But there was also a rose trellis sort of set up, which is no longer there. But basically, the remains of those roses only came out last year when it was so desperately dry and they died. So I've cleared, apart from the sundial still there. There was a medlar tree on one side of the sundial, which I remembered all my life. Luckily, it had a sucker one year, and I transplanted the sucker. The sucker has survived the drought, but the old one has died. Mm. So I'm really pleased to have this medlar still there.
Absolutely.
So it's basically at the end of the enclosed lawn, and the rest of it I'm just intending to have as grass now because it's quite a nice expanse.
And do I remember a persimmon in that
In the next court where the vegetables were, you would, I thought the persimmon was dead, and it is shooting leaves again now, which I'm delighted about. There's also four crab apples, which I planted when I came here in that next garden, which was what we called the vegetable garden. And I thought they were all dead too, but they've come to life. So I'm really pleased about that.
Thank you, Will.
Then we have a photograph just looking at the front of the house. One of the, it must have been very fashionable to have houses covered with creepers and things. And we as a child, there was a lot of, it was a cat's claw, is it?
I think it's a Virginia creeper or a Boston ivy, one of those two.
Yeah, and then there was the one with the yellow flower, which
yeah,
was a
cat. That's the cat's claw.
And it was on the double, on that high part of the house, very thick. And I used to think it was rather spooky having all this vine. Anyway, I'm glad it's all gone. And some of the original Virginia creeper is still on the front part of the house. There's another photograph here looking from the tennis court up towards the front of the house. And you can see the fruit trees that sort of were on the lawn beside the tennis court. The other thing that's interesting, at the back of the house, you'll see a huge radiata pine, which I well remember. That pine had a hitching rail around it, which I've kept, the hitching rail, because the pine, it was a massive tree that went straight up, and then a big branch went out over the house. And we were concerned that the one over the house was going to fall on the house. And one year we had a man with a crane to come and take it off. And in doing so, he underestimated the weight of the branch, and the branch came crashing down and the crane twisted. But luckily, the branch fell on top of a rainwater tank, which was full of water. So it concertinaed this rainwater tank and gently lowered the branch sort of just onto the roof without damaging the brickwork of the house. So that part of the pine tree was taken down. Then in due course later on, the remainder of the pine tree had to come down because it was old and you could see signs of strain. But I'm very glad the whole thing's gone, because it was the devil with pine needles and things in the guttering.
And
so it was always
like
a problem.
From the photograph, it looks to be nearly twice the height of the house. So it would have been a worry if in a storm.
It really was a massive pine tree. And actually, when I was a baby, I think there was a very big snowstorm in 1949, and one of the lower branches came down then on the towards the back of the house. So we were very pleased to see the end of I was particularly with the pine tree. The other photograph is one taken from the front fence looking up through the vegetable garden, and you can quite clearly see the layout of the vegetables, and there were certain trellises and things scattered around, little lawn paths between each vegetable garden, looking up to the very square-shaped hedge. And actually, if you look carefully, you'll see there were just gaps in the hedge. Those gaps my parents turned into arches, which they are now, going through the hedge. So that's that. And
well, that's wonderful to have that record, Will.
The only other photo I do have is one taken across the front paddock towards the house, and you can clearly see the bunya pine tree. There are a lot of radiata pines from the front of the house going down to the back, and then in an L shape down to the side. Well, a lot of those are gone. You can see there's a hedge along the side of the garden, and it's just a general shot, and you can see both the bunya pine tree and the very big radiata pine at the back. So that was
and
that.
A lot of sheep in the foreground, as all
yes.
grazing families
yes.
used to.
My father had Western properties with merino sheep, and here he had a little Bordelaise stud. So they're not known for their wonderful wool, but anyway, that was the Bordelaise in front of the photograph. And then the only other photograph I have is a photograph, just a snap taken of the lane. Well, it's the road, Buena Vista Road, as it was when I was going to school, and looking out across bare paddocks, which is now, of course, all built up on and developed.
That is remarkable, Will.
Yeah, that road, occasionally we would drive down it if we were going somewhere as a shortcut to the highway, but we would never attempt to drive up in the car because it was so rough and you know, gullies and all sorts of things. But it just shows how times have changed.
Now, you inherited here, really, an intact Victorian garden. What aspirations did you have for it when you came here?
Well, when I arrived, and also, I'm not a gardener as such. I feel I don't really know much about it, but I do appreciate gardens. I love looking at them. But I'm by no means a horticulturist by any standards. But I thought the house, everything had been closed up a bit for about 3 years before I came here. And so things had got quite overgrown. And the very first thing I had to do when I came was have the drive cleared so that the pantechnicon could come with my furniture, because it was like driving up a tunnel before everything was sort of meeting over the top of the drive. It was lovely. I loved it. But I had to be practical, and things had just gone wild. So anyway, I cleared all that, and then over the time cut back a lot of growth and so on. My main concern was keeping the garden pretty well as I remembered it, with plantings from my childhood, and just keeping it neat and tidy if I could, basically. So I've over the years I'd taken up all the little rock borders and put them down again, things like that, basically just try and maintain it as it is, yeah.
You mentioned planting some crab apples in the vegetable garden. Are many other trees that have been added in your watch?
Not a lot. Some Japanese maples, which sadly have died. I've tried different times growing one thing that I really would have liked to have had was a magnolia, which I've put in four and I haven't had any luck with them. And I've put in different things over the time. I have put in some claret ash and some plane trees within the surrounds of the property, not within the garden so much.
And how did the drought that we've just come out of impact the garden here?
Well, it was a devastating drought, as everyone knows. It was just horrible because it went on for so long, and I had absolute nightmares about things dying. My main concern was the big hedge and the bunya pine tree, and I really didn't know what to do about the hedge, because before we had water restrictions, I was wondering whether I should try and put soaker hoses under it or what. But when you actually look into it, it's such a complicated business. Then, of course, we had water restrictions, and then people were saying, well, perhaps you could buy water. But once you start interfering, I feel you could muck things up, because you've got to keep going until it rains. So anyway, I looked around town and I was observing things in the parks and other people's hedges and kept my fingers crossed. And fortunately, it's looking satisfactory. But the thing that I kept on thinking was that the hedge had never been pampered. And even the bunya pine tree, I'd noticed at times they have sprinklers and things going down at Central Park, and it's always been well watered and maintained and probably lower and all this sort of thing. So I thought, well, my plantings here are probably pretty hardy, and I hoped that would have stuck to them, and it did.
And look, by now, after the rain, it looks absolutely magnificent, Will, full of flowers, and your trees are very healthy, and the hedge is a picture.
Well, thank you very much. And what I'm doing is just waiting to see if things... I'm not rushing into cutting things down that look as though they're dead, because they might shoot. And then as time goes by, we'll sort of trim them up and cut anything back that needs doing. And I know the sorts of small plantings that I'm going to have hardy things like lavenders and salvias and things that are penstemons, which are old-fashioned plants, and they'll suit the garden and attract the bees.
Well, you're lucky to have a wonderful history of photographs of the garden. Did you also perhaps have planting lists from any time in the past?
No.
Rose orders and the like?
No, nothing like that, no. So, didn't have any of those. The only other thing that I had planted here since I've come up was some more roses, but not a huge number, but just some more. But some of the original roses, too, that I've remembered all my life. Fortunately, I also gave them a little bit of water. They were special ones, some red ones out the front. The other thing that I was really keen on preserving is a lemon tree, which is in the back garden, backyard area, which has been fantastic, and it's older than I am. And last year it had the most massive crop of lemons I have ever seen. So it's fascinating watching the plants and how they've survived this really very, very difficult time.
And what is your favourite part of the garden, Will?
My favourite part of the garden is it's on a sort of southern lawn area between where the water tank was and the glasshouse. And it had some large shady trees, and within that area under the trees, since I've been here, I've planted a lot more daffodils and bulbs and things, and I'm hoping that they're going to keep surviving, because I had visions of this wonderful vista of blue and yellow and all that sort of things. And I've also put in, my neighbours down the road gave me very kindly a lot of iris. I love iris, so I've got a lot of iris all over the drive, you know, down the driveways and in certain spots around. And there again, I thought they'd all died too in the drought, but they've come back and they're looking very happy.
And that little greenhouse is an absolute picture. Could you describe it for the tape?
Well, it's been it's a very basic little. Well, when it was built, it was rather special because it had steam heating in it. It was very similar to the one at Somras, because I think Mr. Tindall and Mr. White were friends, and they used to compare notes. And anyway, as far as I've been concerned, it's always just been we called it the glasshouse and things. My mother used to have quite a collection of geraniums. She loved people to give her cuttings and things, and that was one thing she always liked. And she'd always remember the plants from her friends and say, oh, well, that's so-and-so, and this is from so-and-so. And so we've tried to keep all that going, but next to the greenhouse at one stage there was a very large silky oak tree which sheltered it, but sadly it blew over. Fortunately, it didn't blow over the glasshouse, it went the other way, but it's taken the shade away a bit, and it's now very hot in the summer, and I still have some of the geraniums and things, but it's not as it was.
But it's a delightful little sort of Gothic building.
Yes, and its roof, it had been replaced in my time, as a matter of course, the timber frame for the glass roof, that had all been redone. And then, of course, in the 1996 hailstorm, the whole thing was smashed again. So it was replaced then, all the glass and so on. So it's like a cat, it's had several lives.
It's up to its ninth life. Now, is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you think we really should have on record about the garden?
Can't think of anything in particular. The garden has always been, it's been a happy garden, and I think that's one of my big memories of this place. It's been a place to relax as a family, and there's a tennis court, and we've often had tennis, and we'd have sort of afternoon teas, and as earlier in our lives, there seemed to be more time, and people could sit out in a nice part of the garden, and they'd take the tea out there or things like that. And so we've got a million happy family memories of the garden. And so it's just been a special place, and by no means perfect, but I think it has a certain feel about it when you drive up the drive now, probably.
Well, that's wonderful, Will. Thank you very much indeed.